So, my sermon today, I will admit right from the beginning, I've brought it to you before. It was exactly, well, not exactly, but it was 10 years, 2 months ago. So, I say that because my PowerPoint was rather memorable and people will remember it. Jesse and Samantha are already laughing. So, those were the two I was thinking of. But, I say this to say this next point. The sermon I'm bringing is, and has been, and probably will always be, a very controversial topic. And it's because it is very personal. And, well, that's why. It's because it's very personal and sometimes hard to accept. On that note, sometimes people say, well, why is he preaching this? Who's he talking to? And the answer is, I'm talking to every single person in here. And if you think, well, he's preaching this sermon right at me, the answer is, yes, I am. Now, am I doing it knowingly that you needed this lesson for some particular reason? No, I'm not doing it for that reason. But if this is a lesson that you need or have questions on, then by all means, that's why I'm preaching it. I'm hoping to share the word of the Lord with you. And I'll make this point again later, but there's a chance that something I say isn't right. And you're like, you know what, Brian, I don't think the scriptures bear out the point that you brought out. Let's talk about it. Let's get together and study that so that we can both, whichever one of us needs to bend, can bend our ways to the scriptures so that we're right in his sight. And so the topic today I want to bring to you is a topic of marriage. And marriage is something that God has ordained. He has put together so that a man and woman can have a bond together and live their lives in unity. And he talks and uses the marriage relationship many times to explain many different relationships, particularly of God with his people. And so marriage is something that we all need to understand and how it works. I'm talking about a little bit about marriage and also talking about divorce and remarriage. So marriage, divorce, and remarriage, often an acronymized MDR. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And so we're going to look at the basic Bible patterns and we're going to draw simple diagrams of what that pattern looks like and then consider that compared to the scripture. So let's meet the characters that I'm going to use in marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And I use these characters a little lightheartedly because it is a very heavy topic, and also apparently they're very memorable. But the man and the woman, and I will go ahead and apologize. In all my depictions, it's the woman who has the issues or keeps dying. I'll just warn you that in advance. And that's because I'm left-handed. And you figure out what that means. Anyway, so we're going to use these characters to look at. I'm also going to use, when I grew up, I had a Bible timeline. I've got this way too close. I had a Bible timeline that I used in the classrooms. And The frowny face would be on some of the kings, and some of the kings would be smiley faces. That was just a very quick, easy pictorial to help us understand whether they were a good or a bad king. And then there were the kings who were flat faced, and that's because they went back and forth. So we're going to have frowns and smiles, and all those frowns or smiles mean is whether or not that person is in a position whether they can get remarried or not. It does not say whether they are right in the sight of God or not right in the sight of God, just whether or not they can get married or not, or if their marriage is right in God's sight. So, justified with Scripture. And then we'll give you what I believe the Bible is depicting as truth or not. And of course, there's always something dying. Hopefully they'll make it the last through the rest of the program with a check or a minus. And so looking at marriage, divorce, and remarriage, this is not going to be an in-depth textual study. I'm not going to use a single Greek word while I'm up here. But we're going to look enough at the scriptures to see what the Bible pattern is. And there's several verses that we're going to look at through this lesson. I'll cover these on the slides as we go. And there's also other verses that don't specifically mention marriage, divorce, or remarriage, but they are related, and we can draw applications from those as well. So let's go to our first text, Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. We'll just read verses 4 through 6. He answered, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate.'" And so let's draw out what we have here. We have a couple of parents who have a boy, and another set of parents have a girl. And they are single, never married, and they are free to marry. They're also free to remain single, as we can see in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. These two meet in a relationship, a marriage ensues. We can see from Scripture that this arrangement is something that is approved by God. Two people who were single, never married, are free to marry, and they did. And this is an approved arrangement by God. Romans chapter 7, 1 through 3 also shows us another approved arrangement in marriage. Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7, we'll read the first three verses. It says, "Or do you not know, brothers, for I am speaking to those who know the law, that the law is binding on a person only as long as he lives. For a married woman is bound by law to her husband while he lives, but if her husband dies, she is released from the law of marriage. Accordingly, she will be called an adulteress if she lives with another man while her husband is alive. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law. And if he marries another man, she is not an adulteress." And so here we can see an arrangement. These two people, perhaps the two people from the previous slide, are married. And then death comes into the scene. The wife in this picture dies, leaving the man single, widowed, free to remarry, or free to remain single. And so I draw this out as a scriptural depiction of a divorce. And we don't normally call this a divorce, but that marriage has ended. It has been severed through death. So let's look at Matthew chapter 5, 31. Another scenario that is approved, that's an awkward way to say it, but of a divorce that is approved by God. So Matthew chapter 5, 31 and 32. It says, "It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery." Matthew 19:9 is also a similar verse. Read it quickly. Matthew 19:9 says, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery." And so looking at how this would be depicted, we have a man and woman in a scriptural relationship. And then for whatever reason, another person enters the scene. And, you know, maybe it's his fancy colored icing. I don't know. For some reason, fornication has occurred, which leads to a divorce. A divorce for the cause of fornication. And this leaves the man in the scenario, single, free to remarry, and also free to remain single. The woman, however, as is depicted in Matthew 5, 31 and 32 and Matthew 19, 9, and this is the person who committed adultery, is single, not free to remarry, and must remain single. And I depict it this way simply to show the scriptural divorce that is ensuing here. However, it is worth noting that two things. This divorce is not a sin. The fornication was a sin. But if the husband and wife, back here in the... let's see here. Do I have a laser? No. Anyway, if the husband and wife had decided to reconcile the differences, the wife put away the other man, no longer saw him again, asked for forgiveness, the husband can choose to forgive. He is not required to divorce for the cause of fornication. All right, so this slide is what I would... say is as complicated as it gets on the scriptural side of the house. So we'll look at the one and only caveat to divorce and remarriage. So two are scripturally married. They have a divorce for some reason, not a scriptural reason. The two of them are divorced. Neither one is free to remarry. However, based on 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 11, these two can be reconciled. They can marry each other again. And that is the only remarriage that can occur after a unscriptural divorce. And so the only way two parties can remarry after divorce is to reconcile. Or the only way both parties can remarry after divorce is to reconcile. So I want to look at just a summary of who it is that can marry. The single never married, the single widowed, and this is both male and female, and the single who is divorced for the cause of fornication, the innocent party. And again, the one small caveat is that the two parties in a scriptural marriage that ends in divorce can reconcile. And so that's just a quick summary slide of who it is that is free to get married. Let's talk about some of the arguments related to marriage, divorce, and remarriage, and those who are argued, well, this in this case it's this, and in this case it's that. And let's just look at the pattern of these arguments and see if it relates in any way to the pattern that we saw from the Scripture. And by no means do I have every single argument depicted up here. I have a few of the ones that I have run across in discussions with people, but I dared not even search the internet because I would be here, probably never get to sit down. So let's look at bound, loosed arguments. And that might be my phrasing of it, but these are arguments that are based on wordings primarily from the King James Version, the bound and loosed wordings. And let's look at the pattern of these arguments and consider it as it compared to what we read in Matthew chapter 5 and Matthew chapter 19. So we have a couple that are scripturally married. They get divorced for some reason other than for fornication, leaving both parties not eligible for marriage. The man in this case meets a woman who is eligible to be married. They marry, and this is an unscriptural marriage, but the two of those marry. For whatever reason, they divorce. Maybe even the woman realizes this is not a scriptural relationship, but for whatever reason, they divorce, and this leaves the woman single. She finds a man who is eligible for marriage, and they marry. Now, in the bound and loosed arguments, one of the arguments that is made is that this woman was never bound to the first man, therefore she was never married, and therefore she is free to marry someone who is scripturally eligible for marriage. And I draw that pattern out just to say, does that look like what we see depicted in Scripture that we read earlier? And also think about just a little bit of the implications of this arrangement. Because this iterative cycle of being married to people who are not eligible to be married can go on and on and on and on. And it would make somebody, now this example is getting a little old, some people probably don't even know who she is, but that would make somebody like Elizabeth Taylor eligible for marriage, though she's dead now. Because she had 5 or 6 marriages, but she was never married to anybody, 7, Gordon says, never married to anybody who was eligible to be married. That would make her, if she were still alive, eligible for marriage using this argument. And it's not what we see depicted in Scripture. And the passages, these are Bible-based arguments. I don't want to imply that this is something somebody pulled out of their head. This is Bible-based arguments, but I simply submit that it doesn't follow the pattern that we've seen presented. Another argument, I'll just go ahead and call it what I've heard it called, is the mental divorce position. So we have a scripturally married couple. There is a divorce for some reason. The man, in this case, finds another spouse, and they get married. At this point, the wife puts away her husband for the cause of fornication in her mind, and then finds another spouse, and they get married. And the argument is that because God has not loosed them from that relationship, the spouse who gets married second has the option to put that person away because now they're committing fornication because they have remarried, and I can put them away mentally for the cause of fornication and get remarried. And this is called the mental divorce position. And again, it doesn't follow the pattern of the divorce coming after the fornication that we read about in Matthew 19:9. And so here a variation of that argument, slightly different. A husband and wife, scripturally married, they get divorced for just any reason. And then the husband and wife are now divorced and single. And once again, the woman dies. And so now the husband says, now I am freed from that marriage bond and I can remarry. And all these arguments I have heard from brothers and sisters in the church made very passionately. So it's not like I'm pulling these off of a random internet site. These are arguments that people hold. And that this marriage would be scriptural based off of the passage I read to you earlier in Romans chapter 7, the first 3 verses. However, once again, the divorce occurred before the death. And so this doesn't follow the pattern that we see in Scripture. So this is, again, not a pattern that we see in Scripture. And, you know, I'd love to talk about any of these that we present. I don't know if it's something, a conversation that we can have quickly, just, you know, after, in between services or after service. Let's get together and just open the Scriptures and talk about it if there is a disagreement here. I'd love to have a good Bible-based study on a topic. It'd be so much better than talking about the NCAA Final Four, which I don't care about. So, okay, next arrangement. So, the terrible marriage argument, and this one's getting into supposed scriptural reasons for divorce. The terrible marriage argument. So we have a couple scripturally married, and then a divorce occurs, but in this case, it's not just for any reason, it's because of sin. a sin of the husband's abusive, or because of something the husband did, in this case, it's the husband, could be the wife. They're in jail. Their failure to provide. They're not a spiritual leader. All these things are things that are sinful or the result of a sin. And therefore, the wife says, this is a terrible marriage. That's my term for it. You know, I'm putting my husband away. And this divorce is not scriptural. It is not authorized by God. And, this is one, just stopping here without the remarriage. This is one that I think I would be surprised if everybody doesn't know somebody in this situation, either in a terrible marriage where there's abuse or not a spiritual leader, etc., or has divorced and is now single. Just know that that divorce was a sin. It is not what God would wish. And it can be very hard to see those situations, but keep in prayer, and as Murray said in his first sermon, one step at a time. So they are divorced, and then the wife remarries because the husband was, failed to provide, and then they are married. And this marriage relationship, both the divorce and the remarriage, is not authorized in scriptures. There is no text to support this argument. This one, the alien sinner conversion or same calling. And this is again based on a scripture that is not specifically talking about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, but has been applied to it, and it's basically stating, in whatever state you were called in, remain in that state, talking about things that were neither sin nor not sin, such as circumcision. And so the argument is that two people, scripturally married, they get a divorce, leaving a man and a woman out of each. They get married. This is not a scriptural arrangement, but they come to Jesus. They become Christians, and now that marriage is approved by God. And this is not the pattern that we see in Scripture. It's based off of 1 Corinthians 7, 17 through 24. But again, this is not the pattern that we see. And some might say, well, while they were not under the law of God, they weren't held to those rules and standards. And there's no point in time on this earth while we are alive that we are not under the law of God. It's just whether or not we choose to submit to it. And so this is not an arrangement that I see patterned out in Scripture as an authorized marriage. This one is sake of the kingdom, and I have never run across anybody who did this one. This is one I found off the internet, and I just found it interesting, so I put it on there. But sake of the kingdom, and this is not a remarriage argument, this is a divorce argument. So you have a scripturally married couple, and then for the sake of the kingdom, they divorce, so that the one can be free to go off and do the work of the Lord. And this is very simply not an arrangement that we see borne out in Scripture at all. In fact, it says, are you in a marriage? Do not seek to be loosed in other passages. So this is not a reason for a scriptural divorce in the sight of God. And so our conclusion, and I guess I went through these slides rather fast, but the conclusion, and some of these, they're so easy to say. So easy to say, but very, very difficult to apply. And so a note to all of us in whatever state we're in, we need to watch out for lawyeristic arguments, and this was before Bill was even here, might even been before Bill had his law degree, but lawyeristic arguments, and what I mean by that is the types of arguments that you might see a lawyer make to confuse and confound the issue and say, look, you can't determine truth here because look at all this confusion that I've just brought before you. Look at all these complicated caveats that are brought. And so therefore, can we really know what is right or wrong here? So we need to watch out for these lawyeristic arguments. Somebody I didn't know as well as my mom did, but in our family, she had one of these complicated situations in her marriage, and it was interesting. She would ask, and she absolved the marriage because she realized it was unscriptural, but she would ask every single preacher that came and did gospel meetings over the year, what would you do in this situation? And it was about 50-50. 50% said, you're free to remarry. The other 50% were said, no, you're not free to remarry. She chose, for the sake of the kingdom, to remain single. She goes, you know, I'm not willing to go and risk it for that. And so that's easy to say, but I know that that wasn't easy for her to apply in her life. As my mom said over and over, she's such a beautiful woman. Could have had her pick of any guy she wanted, but for the sake of the kingdom, she remains single. So, to the single who cannot remarry, I say remain single and do not date. And, you know, so many times it starts off innocent. They're just a friend. They're just a friend. We're just two people who are lonely and we're just getting together as friends. Well, if you were a teenager, you know what that's called? It's called a date. And any time two of the opposite sex get together, it's called a date. And so just be aware of that. Do not date. It only leads to heartache later on. To the single who can marry, choose your spouse carefully. Choose your spouse, and probably 10 sermons could be taught on choosing your spouse carefully. So when you are single, find out these things, especially if you are a little older and single. Ask right up front, have you been married before? It's not a ridiculous question. It is a very reasonable question to ask. Have you been married before? And if they have, find out the details. So choose your spouse carefully. And that also goes back to that terrible marriage argument. Choose your spouse carefully. Listen to the advice of those who are on the outside of the relationship, their opinion of this potential mate and how that can go. So to the married, and again, a very simple statement, strengthen your marriage. Strengthen your marriage. To those who are married in a scriptural marriage, strengthen that marriage. Don't give any opportunity for the fornication to occur. God hates divorce. Even though He allows divorce for fornication, He hates it. God hates divorce. Don't, you know, if you're in a relationship, your marriage, don't give opportunity for fornication to come in. Support your spouse in every way that you can. And the easiest way, simplest way, without creating a whole nother sermon outline that I know to say to do that is, be less selfish. Be more servant-oriented, and that will strengthen your marriage. And, you know, sometimes I say that, and I hear myself, yeah, if Sarah would just do this. No, that's being selfish. That's me trying to make her less selfish. And I just use her because she's my spouse. We have a perfect marriage, of course. But, you know, the idea of being selfless. Be selfless in your marriage, and it will strengthen it in great measure. So that's the lesson. Again, I was talking to Sarah beforehand. I was like, I feel like I'm really leaving a lot unsaid there about how we can avoid the temptations of fornication, how we can strengthen our marriage, how we can choose the right spouse. And we've had a few sermons on that over the years. And I know that, like, for the young, there's Bible classes that we do on a, you know, at once you reach that certain age. We have Bible classes on dating. Those are good things, and I want you to take it very seriously, the thoughts and choosing your spouse. and who it is that you're going to spend the rest of your time with. Also, there's the thought, and I really didn't cover it, of remaining single and how that is a perfectly appropriate and perfectly right in God's sight way to stay for the remainder of your life, whether you choose to be single or you just happen to be single. That is a way that we can serve the Lord in our singleness. And in fact, Paul points out how you have more freedom because you are single. But take this opportunity to quickly relay the invitation to become a servant of God. This lesson hasn't been focused on that entirely, but I want to take the time to say that God has put out an invitation. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." He gives you that invitation. Is always before you, and it's before you now. If you're ready to take on the yoke of Jesus, he says it's light and easy. If you're ready to take on that yoke, let it be known in just a moment when we stand and sing by coming forward. And if you realize tonight at 2 in the morning that I need to put that yoke on, I need to do it now. Don't hesitate to call. You know, if you're calling me, you're going to have to call 3 or 4 times. But keep calling. Because I'll be asleep. But wake me up. That's where I want to be. I want to be with you as you take that step to be a Christian. And perhaps there's those here today who are struggling through something. They have a weight of stress on their mind. They have a weight of sin. Or they see them going in a direction that's leading to sin. Don't go down that road without talking to a brother and sister first. You know, well, don't go down the road. But don't ignore that brothers and sisters here have perhaps been down that road in the past and can help you see the better way. So let that be known as we stand and sing, and let it be known anytime that that you realize that you have a need. So let it be known as we stand and sing number 479.